The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Horse's Mouth Advisor Radio. I'm Doug Pierce, Associate Editor at Horse's Mouth, and today with me, once again, is Charles Sherry, author of our weekly Advisor Talking Points column. Charles, thanks for being with me. Now, your first point today deals with record high margin debt levels. Is this cause for concern?
Doug, thanks for having me back this morning. I wanted to go ahead and highlight this because it's something that's been getting a little bit of play, a little bit of press lately, as record levels of margin debt, and is it something we should be concerned about? If you take a look at Figure 1, you see margin debt peaking in 2000. You see it again peaking in the summer of 2007. And understandably, that causes concern simply because all of us are painfully aware of what happened over the next 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're seeing the same thing. As market hits new highs, we're seeing margin debt climbing to new highs. In fact, it's almost a perfect correlation from the market's bottom. But I think what you have to look at is margin debt driving equities, or is margin debt more of a reflection of what's happening in the equity markets? Margin debt very closely correlates with the ups and downs in the market, market capitalization. In fact, going back to 1960, we're looking at a correlation of 0.69. I think what's really more important, though, is to take a look at Figure 2. What you see is currently margin debt as a percent of the total market capitalization stands at a small 1.6%. And, of course, if you take a look at that chart, you do see it gradually increasing over the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, you've had a proliferation of hedge funds that are more likely to go ahead and utilize margin in their strategies. Right now, the individual investor, for the most part, is not back in the market. So would you be seeing a lot of speculation of them? Well, if they're not in the market, you're not going to be seeing that speculation. One thing we do see from time to time, we saw it in March 2000, we saw it again June, July of 2007, was that the growth in margin debt significantly exceeded the growth in stock prices. That is not happening right now. Put together models where you might be able to take advantage of what's going on between debt and equities. There's really just too many variables that come into play. You might be able to find something where you can come close to market tops, but again, we don't have enough data points. And then, of course, you risk missing a potential upside. If you're talking to clients, questions start to come up about what's going on and with margin. Go ahead, and I think it's important to provide some perspective, and I would actually focus more on Figure 2. As a percent of total market cap, it's still very low.
Yeah, that Figure 2 really kind of makes it pretty clear.
It puts it in perspective.
It puts it in perspective.
And again, it's been climbing, but at 1.6%, that's not what's driving the market. And unwinding of that debt would not be something that's pulling the market down. Just the opposite. Falling equity prices, we're likely to see margin debt come down.
Okay. Well, let's move on to point two, where you sort of covered the small business confidence, which looks to be still kind of sluggishly lumping along, I guess.
That's exactly what we're seeing right now. And I've taken time in the past to talk about consumer confidence. It's not something I think you should look at or really key on a month-to-month basis. You're not going to see spending move to the monthly gyrations in consumer confidence. It's something you take a look at overall trends. When we look at the Small Business Optimism Index, going back to 1986, you can see the current level right around 91. It really correlates very closely with recessionary levels. sales. Now, obviously, we're not in a recession right now. Small business optimism or small business confidence took a big hit as we saw consumer confidence during the 2008-09 recession. But we're not back to pre-recession levels yet. In fact, we've kind of just been, we've really been plateauing over the last 2 to 3 years. We can't seem to break out of this range. And I highlight that in figure three. I think there's a couple of things going on here. First of all, you could argue that the regulatory environment coming out of Washington is one more headache for small business owners. And small business owners, as our advisors know, you're wearing all the hats. So additional regulatory burdens it can dampen sentiment. But I think I also look at what's happening in the overall economy. You've got depressed aggregate demand with consumer spending were to pick up. That would translate into higher sales. Stronger sales would translate into profits, which then that would do an enormous amount to lift the tide of small business confidence. When, of course, that happens, you're going to see more spending by businesses. You're going to see more hiring. We're just not seeing it with the generally depressed or slow recovery in aggregate demand. When you look at the GDP data for the recovery, and what we're in year six right now, it is the slowest recovery in over a generation.
And, of course, small businesses are a pretty big employer.
They're big job creators.
Yeah.
Exactly. So. Exactly. And there's nothing like increased sales and profits that's going to lift the mood of small business owners. We're just not seeing that right now, not yet anyway.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next point where there's some good news for retail, maybe finally after this wintry assault.
Maybe finally is a great way to put it. You're exactly, after this assault from Mother Nature. What we found though is when the latest numbers came out, January was revised lower. January is worse than we're expected. So I think that takes away a little bit from what we're seeing in February, but if we got that modest pop, even though we continued to see rough weather last month. So it appears we're starting to maybe come out of this malaise that was created by the rough winter and what it's done to the economy. But when you've got that downward revision in January, there's the expectation that we're going to have a fairly weak first quarter GDP report. I think that's already baked into equities. We've seen equities go to new highs, although we had a little bit of bump in the ride, of course, this week. I saw a report, I think it was about a week ago or so, from macroeconomic advisors. They're suggesting that the weather has shaved one full percentage point off of GDP in the first quarter. They expect that to be made back in some coming up in the upcoming quarters. So at least we're getting some good news from the retailers. We may be finally getting some of this winter weather behind us. One other thing I wanted to mention is a very volatile report lately, but it's nice to see initial weekly jobless claims fall to a three-month low at 315,000. That's below the 2000 pre-recession average of 318,000. But I'd like to see if we can hold on to these levels for a few more weeks. We've had head fakes before with this report with volatility, and some of it may have just been Department of Labor was unable to capture some of the seasonality. So I'd like to see this play out for a few more weeks. But to see it down at 315 initially, that is encouraging and suggests we may not only be seeing a pickup in the labor market, but also it is a hard measure of business confidence. Layoffs aren't going to be decreasing in the aggregate if economic activity is flat.
Okay, and you also mentioned Easter. It's going to be late this year, April 20th. I mean, what could that do? I mean, does Easter traditionally have a big impact on retail?
It does have somewhat of an impact on retail. In fact, we may see it in the same store sales numbers. Traditionally, what we're going to look at, you know, since Easter's April 20th, some of the Easter shopping that might have gone into March is going to be pushed into April. And when you start to see the same store sales reports for early April for the month of March, go ahead, it's a good idea to average those between those 2 months. It does have a modest impact. Now, of course, with the advanced retail sales report coming from the Commerce Department, all of that's seasonally adjusted. But it gets tricky when you've got Easter one year, April 20th. You've got another year in mid-March or late March. So that can have some impact on the data, especially if you're looking at it with same-store sales. but I want to caution, fewer companies are reporting same-store sales than we've seen in the past, which makes it a little bit less reliable of an indicator. What's more important, of course, with same-store sales is what the individual companies are saying in relation to their stock price and any kind of guidance that they might be giving.
Okay, let's move on then to next point, which deals with China and copper prices.
It's kind of interesting what's going on, and this relates back to yesterday's big sell-off in the market over 200 on the Dow. What was interesting was it was an orderly decline. We started out yesterday in positive territory, gradually lost ground through the morning, midday, only to close down more than 200 points. It was hard to really pinpoint what was going on, but when you looked at the day at the close, it was a classic risk-off day. Treasuries did very well. Your defensive sectors on a relative basis outperformed the market. Utilities actually did very well, traditionally a very defensive sector. The Japanese yen did well. Of course, cyclical stocks themselves, those were the worst performers. We saw the same thing with high-yield debt. That was off during the day. And a lot of it, again, we've gotten a lot of soft data recently from China. And I mention in particular here copper prices. It actually, if you remember last week, I kind of had briefly mentioned, oh, copper's down on Friday morning. There's something going on. Is it demand from China? As I had researched it more, it turned out that a solar equipment maker in China became the first company to default on a bond traded in mainland China. That hit copper prices. There's some concern that there may be some cracks are widening in the Chinese financial system. And then Monday comes along, and we get this sharp 18% decline in exports year over year, and where expectations had called for a 5% increase. Well, we're right around the Chinese Lunar New Year. That can have impacts upon the data. You've got how they're front-loading or billing shipments. Whether they throw more of that and that into January, but in some respects, the market was in no mood for excuses. We saw copper prices continue to go down, and we've had just a host of reports that I list here where we're at 4, 5, 8, you know, the 13-year lows in particular data points. So we're getting really soft data, and I mentioned copper because China accounts for 40% of the world's demand for copper, and copper is a key industrial metal. In fact, sometimes copper has been referred to as Dr. Copper, the metal with a PhD in economics, because of this perceived ability to be able to call the business cycle. So this is something to keep an eye on. Back in January, and we saw some problems in Turkey and Argentina, that seemed to shake U.S. markets just a bit. But it's Turkey and Argentina. They're not big players on the global stage. And after a 30% run-up from the year before, it was a good excuse to take profits. But China's the world's second largest economy. There's a lot going on with the financial system. We're seeing that play out in the price of copper. You look at other industrial metals, they haven't fallen as much recently, but they're hanging near four-year lows. And that seemed to play a pretty big role in yesterday's sell-off. I also might mention tensions are up between Russia and Ukraine. That may have had some impact on yesterday's market too. This morning we're up a bit, but we're still continuing to see some strength in treasuries. That tends to be a flight to quality type asset. Something to watch. Overall, though, you get some movement in the market. There's still a lot of strong tailwinds or powerful tailwinds that are supporting U.S. equities at this point.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at the week ahead. Looks like we're going to be watching the Fed.
Absolutely. And this Fed meeting is going to be interesting. Fed meetings are always important, Doug. But it's more or less baked in that we're going to see another $10 billion reduction in the QE, the monthly bond buys, to $55 billion. I think that was pretty much assured when we got we got February's payroll number out at 175,000, and we've gotten some talk from Fed officials that the hurdle is very, very high as far as tapering on QE. The Fed wants to shift, and I've spoken about this before, they want to shift to what's called forward guidance. Forward guidance is just the Fed's way. It's Fed officials making repeated assertions that the Fed funds rate is going to stay near zero for a considerable period, even after quantitative easing ends. They want to do that as a way to anchor the long end of the yield curve rather than continuing with these bond purchases. There's some concern among Fed officials that continued QE not only does it expand the Fed's balance sheet, but there's a potential for distortions in the financial markets or the creation of bubbles. So they kind of want to get away from that. What the economists and the analysts are going to be looking at, and which gets more difficult to explain to clients, is how are they going to frame forward guidance? We've had this for over a year now. We've had one of the three thresholds for raising the Fed funds rate is that unemployment rate that falls to 6.5%. Ben Bernanke had stressed over and over, it's not a trigger, it's just a threshold. But the unemployment rate has come down as low as 6.6%. March it ticked up to 6.7, and that 6.5% threshold is becoming increasingly irrelevant. So what we saw in the minutes coming from the last Fed meeting was, and there's no consensus here, do we change this to use another quantitative measure? Would you have 6 or 6.25% on the unemployment? How would you do that? Or are there other Fed officials who want to look at more qualitative features? And I would think we're probably going to move to March meeting. We don't know if we'll see it come out of the March meeting not or yet, but there's a fairly good chance we'll see some new language. We'll have something to talk about. Janet Yellen will lead her first press conference as a new Fed chief, and of course she'll be peppered with questions. If there is some changes and how the Fed, how the Fed guides, we'll get some questions with that. Love to hear what she's saying about the economy, what she thinks about the weather.
When is that press conference scheduled for?
It's right after the Fed meeting. Fed meeting is a two-day meeting, Tuesday through Wednesday. Typically, the press conference starts, I want to say, 2:15 Eastern time.
Okay.
And, of course, at the same time, the Fed will come out with its quarterly forecast for inflation, unemployment, GDP, and such. But the press conference always captures lots of attention. And it'd be interesting to see her thoughts, if she's asked anything, her thoughts on China. And one other thing, and I rarely hear this asked, I would like someone to ask, what keeps her awake at night? What keeps her up at night? Just to kind of get some of her thinking.
I doubt you're going to. She's going to be pretty tight-lipped on that. <I'd imagine. laughs>
She'd have to answer that diplomatically, but it would be interesting if we get any insights into her thought process.
So is Bernanke on a beach somewhere right now, do you think?
Bernanke, it's interesting. I think he was picked up by, I want to say, the Brookings Institute, and I could be off of that. He may be taking an extended vacation at this point. He's writing a book.
He's working on the book, of course.
He's working on the book right now. So, and maybe he's at the beach while he's working on that book. I hope he's somewhere down south because it's been quite chilly. At least he can enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah.
Or that, or somewhere in Southern California, which unfortunately California's been quite dry.
Hmm.
It's a great time to vacation there now, but it's they definitely need rain.
Yeah. And then you had something about housing.
We're always looking at housing. I mean, that's such an important pillar of the economy. We've got February housing starts coming out. If you recall, we were down about 15-16% in January on starts, including that astounding 60% decline in the Midwest. Again, how do you push dirt when it's frozen and it's covered with snow? So let's see what's happening there. I want to look at what home builder sentiment, what's their read on the market. And then existing home sales. That one's been in a downward trend lately. There's been concerns that inventory is too tight, prices are rising, and that's dampening sales. You know, if you don't have the inventory, you don't have the homes to sell. That's hurting. And then we saw a couple of months ago, pending home sales took a bit of a dip. So there's some expectation we'll see another decline in February as those pending home sales, which is contracts signed but not yet closed, those eventually close. So we'll keep an eye on that. So we got some housing, and, of course, you know, I think the Fed leads the way.
All righty. Charles, thanks for joining me today, and we'll talk with you next week. You've been listening to Charles Sherry, author of Horse's Mouth's weekly Advisor Talking Points column, which you can read every Friday on Horse's Mouth. Now, Charles also offers advisors market commentaries to use in their newsletters and blogs, which you can learn more about at www.financialjumble.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk with you next week. Bye.
This Horse's Mouth presentation is offered specifically for financial advisors and may not be reproduced, broadcast, or distributed without permission from Horse's Mouth. Unauthorized use, reproduction, or distribution of this material is a violation of federal law and punishable by civil and criminal penalty.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.